Good afternoon. The members of the Jenkins family and members of the Morehouse and Scientific Research family and public health assembly, ladies and gentlemen. It is my esteemed honor and privilege to extend words of appreciation and condolence on behalf of the 12th President of Morehouse College, Mr. David A. Thomas, who did not join us today. As we appreciate and revere the life and research brilliance of alumnus Bill Jenkins. Morehouse alumnus and distinguished mystic Howard Washington Thurman, class of 1923, often stated that over the heads of her son, Morehouse holds a crown as she challenges them each day to go taller and taller. Today, we are here to witness Bill's crowning moment as one of Dr. Mays' most accomplished sons and a member of his final graduating class of 1967. Alumnus Jenkins was a treasured son of Morehouse College and will be remembered fondly by all who knew him. His dedication to academic excellence is reflected in his pursuit of knowledge. After earning his BA degree in mathematics from Morehouse College in 1967, he became one of the first African Americans to join the U.S. Public Health Service Commission's Corps. He founded the Morehouse Public Health Sciences Institute, and the rest is history. He was a powerful voice for the voices, and his record is unsurpassed example of what a Morehouse man is and what a Morehouse man can do for his people. His long-standing support of the college through his commitment to science and research places him among the alumni who share a commitment to raising the bar of respect for our beloved Morehouse College. A man of enormous charm, high intellect, keen commitment to public health, and love for his alma mater and his family, Bill Jenkins is truly a renaissance Morehouse man. In recognition of his stalwart dedication to his alma mater, the public health profession, his community, and the nation, we are blessed to have known him as he passes the baton to a new generation of outstanding research scientists. Farewell, Brother Jenkins. We'll meet you on the road. Thank you.
As a young scientist, Bill became enraged when he accidentally stumbled across evidence of the infamous Tuskegee syphilis study. He dedicated the remainder of his life trying to ensure that nothing like the Tuskegee study would ever happen again. I was blessed to have met Bill Jenkins on my very first day of work at CDC in 1987, and to have him be my supervisor not once but twice during my career. Bill was a lifelong advocate for social justice, health equity, and providing opportunities for minorities to succeed in public health careers. Bill served as the manager of the Tuskegee Health Benefit Program for 10 years. When he decided to retire in 2003, he chose me to manage the program. And because I knew the importance of the study and its role in shaping his life, I too held the program and especially its unknowing participants in the highest regard. Today, you will hear tributes about Bill and the programs that were dear to him. Many of the programs were conceived, implemented, and assessed by Bill in collaboration with his impressive list of friends and colleagues across the country. Listen, and you will hear Bill's values, his goals, and dreams for making this world a better place for such a time as this, as well as for generations yet unknown. We will hear memorial tributes from Dr. Helene Gale, Dr. David Satcher, and Dr. Georges Benjamin. They will be followed by a solo from Dr. Shalewa Crouch.
Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon. Diane and Danielle, friends and family, it is really an honor for me to have been asked to give a few remarks about my friend and brother, Bill Jenkins. I feel fortunate to have had my life intertwined with Bill's for almost 35 years as a colleague, a co-conspirator, a friend, and a brother. Like so many, I first met Bill when I came to CDC in 1984. In those days, there were very few Black EIS officers and even fewer Commissioned Corps or civil servants in leadership roles. Bill clearly thought it was his mission to test each of us to see if we were down with the cause and then recruit us into service. Finding me worthy, he put me into a coalition of willing people like Walter Williams, Frank Richards, Alula Hagman, Cheryl Blackmore, Diane, Sonia Hutchins, Roland Gator, and so many others. We started meeting often at my apartment because of its proximity to CDC, exploring and debating what it meant to be Black at CDC and what our responsibility was for making the organization more responsive to its employees of color and communities we came from. Bill, who loved titling things, dubbed us the Social Health Society. I said, Bill, we're just a group of people sitting around the kitchen and talking. He said, no, we're the Social Health Society. He also sometimes affectionately referred to us as Gail's Gorillas. Our initial meeting place is because he thought of us as this kind of subversive, underground, revolutionary force. But from that Social Health Society, and Bill was always pushing the envelope, many ideas were hatched and led to long-lasting change. From the landmark MMWR article that highlighted the disproportionate impact of AIDS on Black and brown communities, to the idea for a conference to focus on minority AIDS, for pushing for the Office of Minority Health, or for the apology for the Tuskegee study. Most often, our gatherings would start with Bill throwing out an idea that we all thought was outrageous and a bridge way too far. By the end, either because we were truly convinced or because we knew it was futile to keep arguing with Bill, we accepted the idea and we also accepted the task and the roles that Bill assigned all of us. As I took on greater levels of responsibility within CDC, my assignments from Bill just got harder and harder. Bill would say, you have to do it, Heavy. Bill, listen to you. You go talk to Dr. Mason, Dr. Roper, Dr. Satcher, and do whatever idea I think should be done. And I'd say, yeah, Bill, they'd listen to you too if you didn't deliberately try to be so provocative and at least try to deliver your ideas and your messages with just a bit of tact. You know, I think we had this unspoken bet with each other. My bet was that somehow, over time, I could teach Bill the value of nuance, subtlety, and compromise to try to convince people about his position. I think his bet was that he could convince me to keep sticking my neck out for his seemingly improbable ideas. Guess who won that bet? But you know, it's a bet that I'm actually glad that I lost, because I'm a better leader and a better person because of it. We all know that one of Bill's real talents was in challenging all of us to be bolder and better than we would have been otherwise. Probably the experience that typifies that the most and is most often referenced is the presidential apology from the Tuskegee study. At the time, Bill was working in my office of the director of the National Center for HIV, STD, and TB Prevention. He was directing his as Brian said, the benefits program for the survivor of the Tuskegee study. One day, Bill came to me with the idea that we should get President Clinton to deliver an apology for the role that the U.S. Public Health Service played in implementing that study. I remember thinking, it's a great idea, but it would never happen. I suggested that having Dr. Satcher, the head of CDC, the responsible agency, do the apology was fine. I mean, after all, Dr. Satcher was no small deal himself. Or the Secretary of Health would be appropriate, and clearly much more feasible. I just didn't believe that we could get the President of the United States to make an apology on behalf of an issue related to poor black people. But Bill was undeterred because he knew it was the right thing. He helped convene the commission to evaluate the right course of action, and that broad-based group of people agreed that a presidential apology was in order, and there was clearly precedent for such an action. David Satcher, another bold leader, agreed with the findings, called Secretary Shalala, who called President Clinton. And on May 16, 1997, in the East Room of the White House, I witnessed President Clinton issue a formal apology for the Tuskegee study for untreated syphilis in the Negro male. Clearly, one of the most moving experiences of my career. Bill, who pushed me and so many others that you mentored and challenged to be our best selves and to never forget who we were and why we were here. You were unapologetically a champion for black people, for social justice, and for equity. I got a note the other day from a colleague who worked with me and Bill in the director's office at NCHSTP. He said it was interesting for me to think about working with Bill at CDC. Although he was sometimes challenging to deal with, it was also clear that no one there had more integrity. So true. There are so many who are here today and around the nation who will continue to talk about the many, many accomplishments that Bill had, of the programs and institutions that he started, of the people whose careers he shaped and whose lives he changed. It's been hard for me to grapple with Bill not being here physically on this earth. I can't call him. I can't talk to him. I can't anticipate seeing him at gatherings or invite him to events. But I know that Bill lives on. He lives on to Diane and Danielle. Diane, you know you were truly the love of his life and his soulmate, his princess. Far from his mythical ideal wife, an obedient woman from Villarica, Georgia, Bill found a true partner in Diane. And Danielle, what a gift you were to him. You challenged him in ways that I'm not sure he was possible. And he grew as a result of loving you. But there's a bit of Bill that lives in all of us. As I look around the room and I see all the people whose lives Bill touched, all I can do is say, job well done, Bill. Our world is a better place because you were a part of it. We will love you forever. Thank you.
There you go.
To Diane and members of family of Bill Jenkins and to all of the distinguished people, I'm delighted to be here, to be a part of the ceremony. I didn't ask the father to gift, just in case you're wondering. I know better than that. But I do want to say that as I look out at the audience here, I think about chapel at Morehouse College. We were required to attend chapel 6 days a week. every day except Saturday. And in retrospect, I now realize how important that was. Even though we all regretted and resisted it, I now know why it was and the difference it made in our lives. Bill was ill in Morehouse as I was leaving, and I would get to know him later. I would be there for his graduation, because Dr. Mays, as somebody said, was retiring, and I left not too soon and came back because he was delivering the commencement address. Bill was a member of the graduating class. It would be over 20 years before I would interact with Bill Dinkins again. It would be after I had served as president of Harry for 12 years, served on it in Watts as King Group. I would return as director of the CDC, and I would meet Bill Dinkins. Bill enjoyed debating with me. He would invite me to his class here on 80th Summer. And we would take a good topic like the elimination of disparities in health. You know, a lot of people have given me a lot of credit for that goal that was set when I was here in Georgia. But Bill wanted his students to witness me defending that goal. So it was quite an experience. He was brilliant as well known. And he had a way of putting you in your place. So he was certainly one of my favorite people of all time. And like many of you, I'm going to miss him, but he made a contribution. And as Celine said, if the rest of us could make a contribution nearly as significant of the contributions made by Bill, this would be a better world. Now, Bill and Helene and some others put together the communication to the president for the apology, and I was the one to deliver it. And I never forget that evening, after I had read it, I called on Mr. Layla and talked to her about the significance of the work that this group had done. And the next moment I knew President Clinton was on the phone. And we were talking about the importance of the apology to the trustees. But the work was so well done by this team of people, including Helene and Bill, until President Clinton did not hesitate in responding. "You've got to do this," he said. And sure enough, on May 16, 1997, as Helene said, President Clinton issued the apology for the trustees' sake. But back to that chapel, Sale Hall, that could not even hold all of the students at Morehouse. I think it held about 600 students. So a few people got away with my. You know, there were other people who were in line to graduate when they were told that they couldn't graduate because they had too many. They had missed chapel too many times. The word got around, don't mess with chapel. Let me say that in chapel, we heard President Mays say that it must be born in mind, but the great tragedy of life is not in failing to reach our goal. It's in having no goals to reach. And yes, you heard Tyler Thurman say that you guys should know that Morehouse College holds a crown above your head, which will always be struggling to grow big enough to wear. We heard Martin Luther King Jr. said that it's not a tragedy to fail to reach all your goals, or even to die in the process. But you should die striving for the right goals. And as you know, he later did. Such was Morehouse, and Such was the place that helped to shape your genius. I often thought about that when I watched him functioning as a leader at CDC and throughout the country, or in front of his class, making his foyer for his class to defend. Things that I have to write. He was a champion of the day. He was committed, and that's what made him so special. Committed. And besides the Leadership Institute, we like to say that in order to eliminate disparities in health and achieve health equity, we need leaders. We need leaders who care about. We need leaders who know enough. We need leaders who have the courage to do enough. We need leaders who will persevere until the job is done. Your teachings was such a leader. We will always be indebted to him. And hopefully we will always continue to work with those which he so well defined.
Good afternoon, everyone. Diane, family, friends. Viola was a esteemed member of the American Public Health Association. Some of you may not know APHA has been around since 1872. I believe really been the heartbeat and pulse of the nation around public health. And Viola absolutely there with us during his lifetime in every place that he could possibly mess around here. He was a member of our governing council. He was a member of our executive board. He had certainly served as a key advisor to me when I became executive director, and I understand it. He was always a voice listening to me and every person who came for me. I just want to start by publicly thanking him for his service, not just to the American Public Health Association. But I think we ought to just thank him for his service to the nation. We were talking in the back room about all the things that Bill has done, looking at his obituary, reading news stories, et cetera. And I, as many people like him, who have done so many things. I just want you to take a moment and think about all the things that he influenced that nobody's ever going to know about. You know, all the things he started, all the things that he did. And think about what your most memorable moment was. And to that end, I'm going to tell you what mine was. So, he spoke at our 138th annual meeting in 2000. And the theme of that meeting was social justice for public health and care. And I thought that he would certainly be a great speaker to talk to us about that theme. At our opening session, we had about 6,000 people in the audience. And true to his word, he opened up his remarks by saying, and I quote, "I don't have any data to present today. I'm going to do what the old men in the fishing village I grew up in did, and that is tell you a story." And then, of course, we related the story of the Tuskegee study and the really broader issues around it. The story was interesting, but the broader issues were even more interesting because what he wanted for us to understand was this was a study about science going wrong. But at its very core, it was a study about human value. And then he did something that I didn't know he was going to do. But he then asked 6,000 people to say the word racism. And he assured us that several things would not happen. That the sun would not fall from the sky, that the earth would not gobble us up, and that things would be all right. But that it was important for us to say the word racism and call it when we see it. So he did do that. And one of the lessons for me was that as people left that meeting, they felt extraordinarily empowered to call racism when they saw it. But then, of course, he asked us, once you name it, you have to address it. Bill Jenkins is my friend. He's a scholar. He's a mentor. He's a social activist. And all I can say is, Bill, we miss you, but we will never forget the lessons that you taught us. Diane, Mother, and family, your APHA family, send you some love and our extraordinary support. And we'll always be here.
Blessed be the Lord.
thank you to all of the program directors. Dr. Crash was accompanied by can you hear me? I'd like to thank all of the program participants thus far, and to let you know that Dr. Thrash was accompanied by Dr. Joyce. We will now hear more tributes, first by Dr. Noble Nsuru, followed by Dr. Victor Sharma, Serge Skelly, and Dr. Cheryl Blackmore Press. After they have concluded remarks, we will be favored with another solo, If I Can Help Somebody, by Sheila Cunningham, and Ms. Cunningham will be accompanied by Dr. David.
It was in his, as others have already stated, It was in his Morehouse College academic DNA. Benjamin May, John Hope, Howard Thurman, Eddie Glaude, David Satcher, Mordecai Johnson, Martin Luther King Jr. Bill took that Morehouse baton and he didn't lose a stride in this relay. He maintained the pace, advancing social justice and confronting institutional racism. There are a few of our brothers and sisters here in these seats who have, and others who hopefully will, answer the bell and take the baton. Bill's academic DNA meshed with his professional DNA. As public health's core value is social justice. His religious faith, Quakers, social justice is a foundation. His Gullah Geechee, African-centric orientation, Ma'at, represents social justice. Bill's work and contributions to improving the human condition bears this out. In May 1991, Morehouse College of Medicine took a historic first step in a direction that potentially went far beyond countering a statistical disparity to public health problems, announcing the school's intention to explore the possibility of establishing a graduate program in public health. In June 1992, Morehouse School of Medicine, in conjunction with other Atlanta University centric institutions, deliberated about the feasibility of developing a Master of Public Health program. The document entitled "The Feasibility of Establishing a MPH Program at the Morehouse School of Medicine" was prepared by Bill. Otis Will Cobb, Rodney Clark, with assistance from Connie Conrad, Godwin O'Beary, and Dan Blumenthal. In August 1993, Bill leads a cadre through the formulation of the MPH Program Advisory Committee, which among their many tasks shaped the Morehouse Public Health Program's mission. In 1994, Bill expanded the Morehouse miracle. In October 1994, the Morehouse School of Medicine's Master of Public Health Program was launched, enrolling its inaugural class in September 1995. Eventually, Dr. Patricia Rodney, under her leadership, it becomes the first Council on the Education of Public Health accredited program at an HBCU school. Today's director, Dr. Stephanie Miles Richardson. The Inhotep, 1982. The Public Health Sciences Institute, 1988. The Black Leadership Lecture Series, Mid-South Program for Public Health Practice, 1991. The Society for the Analysis of African American Public Health Issues, 1992. The Tuskegee Bioethics Center, 1999. The Consortium of African American Public Health Programs, 2004. And scores of other community-oriented contributions that others will or have already chronicled. These are all programs established by Bill Jenkins' fingerprint, or actually, I should say, his mind print. Our presence here is not only to mourn Brother Bill, but but also to celebrate him, to lift him, his family, and us up. Bill provided platforms through which we could not only succeed, but have that baccalaureate degree, have that Master's of Public Health degree, have that doctorate degree, work for improving the health and well-being of humanity, especially Black humanity. Our brother and friend, Bill Jenkins, may he rest in peace. Blessings forward to the family.
After party, where dozens of alumni and friends, old and new,
spent many hours enjoying stories, fellowship, and Samuel Wilson's cooking. Bill co-taught a seminar course with me, most of which I recorded. My hope is that biographers and documentary filmmakers will make use of my recordings of his classes, professional meeting presentations, interviews, and conversations to share Bill's stories and wisdom with an even wider audience. Please visit go.unc.edu/BillJenkins to see the ones that I have posted publicly. Bill is a very beloved member of our UNC family and will always be.
Responsible for membership, marriages, and spiritual nurture. He and Diane also were important leaders of the annual gathering of Friends of African Descent, which included mostly the U.S., but also people from across the world. In Chapel Hill, he was the co-clerk of the Peace and Justice Committee. Finally, to me, one of Bill's most important contributions to our meeting was his starting and guiding our now well-established tradition of White Night services on New Year's Eve. Our service is a Quaker service because we spend most of the time sitting in silence. But at the end, we have the traditional countdown that Bill taught us from his experience, starting with, "It is now 10 minutes to midnight and all is well." Once again, thank you very much for the chance to share about our fellow Quakers, Bill Jenkins.
Thank you, Diane and Danielle, for inviting me to share some of my thoughts about our services bill and the organization we founded SAFI. I met Bill Jenkins in 1980 when he came to what was then called the Neuro Disease Control Division at CDC, where I was working. But I don't know when I realized that he was so wise at such a young age. But I began to listen to him and to trust his judgment when it came to what we were doing to impact public health, especially in minority communities. Bill had a way of talking about health disparities that made you stop and think and say, "You're right, this is a problem." There was only a handful of African American scientists working at CDC in the early 1980s, I think Helene mentioned some of our names. And Bill would gather us for a happy hour on a monthly basis, but we would discuss serious topics, such as health disparities. And Helene reported that we did meet in her living room because she lived close to CDC. And after a while, I volunteered my living room so I would be at home and wouldn't have to hire a babysitter because I had my children. But Bill encouraged us to speak up at work when individually we might have been the only African Americans in a particular CDC office. He empowered us to use data to inform scientific knowledge, program development, and policy decisions. I believe that one could call Bill the force of nature. And in the fall of 1991, he was influential in creating the perfect storm in Atlanta. A meeting was called and jointly sponsored by the Black Caucus of APHA, the American College of Epidemiology, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The focus of this meeting was to assess the underlying cause of health status and the differentials causing health disparities. Is it due to race or racism? From that meeting, Bill organized a group of primarily African American public health professionals to focus on health disparities as an issue. Bill founded the Society for the Analysis of African American Public Health Issues, SAAPHI. So as the founding president of SAAPHI, Bill was able to facilitate professional development and leadership skills among its members, as well as to initiate and assist in improvement, development, maintenance, and utilization of appropriate databases for the understanding of health problems and needs of African American communities. For over two decades, largely as a result of Bill's encouragement, leadership, and support, SAAPHI members have consistently served on the executive board of APHA. Some SAAPHI members, including myself, have chaired the executive board, and several SAAPHI members served as APHA president. It was my privilege to have served alongside Bill as the first treasurer of SAAPHI, and to have been a firsthand witness to Bill's extraordinary ability to mobilize a cadre of health professionals who will continue to impact public health through SAAPHI for many more decades. SAAPHI is yet another institution of the legacy of my beloved friend, Bill Jenkins. Thank you.
Thank you again to the program participants. We will now hear from Dr. F. DuBose Bowman, Samuel L. Wilson, a longtime friend of Bill's, and then the Jenkins family tribute by niece Robin Jenkins and her brother Albert D. Jenkins III. Those tributes will be followed by a song entitled My Tribute, which is a special song for both Bill and Diane.
Diane and family, thank you for allowing me to participate in this wonderful service, really as a representative of Dr. Jenkins' work. The piece that we just heard, If I Could Hold Somebody, really prompts our reflection about what life is about. Something that I think Dr. Jenkins really got right. While an undergraduate student at Morehouse College, I was fortunate and blessed to meet Dr. Jenkins. In fact, I saw Dr. Weber with me in the audience, and it was at based on her referral that I met Dr. Jenkins. In what will sound like a familiar story to many of you, it was a conversation that ultimately changed my life. The conversation took place just up the hill on Lee Street, at Taco Bell, the restaurant with Dr. Jenkins, excuse me. Just finishing my freshman year as a mathematics major with plans to complete pre-med requirements, Dr. Jenkins' words opened my mind to biostatistics, and witnessing his passion ultimately inspired me to pursue public health. Since Dr. Jenkins' transition in February, I've spent a lot of time reflecting on his enormous contributions to the public health workforce. You see, because he took time to invest in me, because he piqued my interest, because of his dedication and passion for public health and diversity, because of his guidance and encouragement, because of his example, what started as a conversation translated into 2 years of undergraduate public health research experience at CDC, later a master's degree from the University of Michigan in biostatistics, later a PhD in biostatistics from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, a tenure-track faculty position at Emory University and nearly a 15-year career there, ultimately to a tenure professorship, to a department chair position at Columbia University, and now Dean of the University of Michigan School of Public Health. And for those of you who know me, I say these things not to convey personal accolades, but as a testament to Bill. I am a product of Dr. Jenkins' vision. And the beauty is that this pathway, my pathway, is just a single. It represents but a single branch of a tree that collectively reflects the impact and legacy of Dr. Jenkins' lifetime of work. As Dr. Jenkins and I were both math majors, it brings to mind a concept in mathematics called the Erdős number, named after Paul Erdős, who's published more papers than any other mathematician in history. The Erdős number describes a collaborative distance between the mathematician Paul Erdős and another by way of authorship mathematical paper. So if you publish with Paul Erdős, you have an Erdős number of 1. If you publish with someone who published with Paul Erdős, but did you publish with Paul Erdős yourself, you have a number, an Erdős number of 2. At the heart of this number is really a measure of connectivity, impact, and reach. And with the many expressions of remembrance about Dr. Jenkins since February, from people who benefited from his mentorship, guidance, and wisdom, and who continue this work by mentoring others, it is clear that such a measure of connectivity, impact, and reach is very fitting for Dr. Jenkins.
In addition to his avid work as a public health scientist, in addition to his unrest for the status quo of institutions, one quality that stands out for me and that I admire is that Bill, at a very basic level, valued people. His daily investment in people and his unrelenting commitment to diversity and equality work together over time to have a compounding and lasting impact on the public health workforce. As dean at the University of Michigan, I recently wrote about Bill's influence on me in one of our school's major magazines, and I commented on his 2010 address at the American Public Health Association meeting that you heard a little bit about earlier. He pointed to four pillars: focus on mentoring more than modeling, focus on experience more than exposure, focus on long-term goals more than short-term objectives, focus on things that can make a difference. Today serves as an important time to reflect and celebrate Bill's life, but more importantly, to ensure that his message prevails. If we can all commit to mentorship, experience, and long-term goals, then we too can make a difference. And the seeds that Dr. Jenkins planted will continue to bear fruit beyond the time of his life on Earth. As we all do our part to pick up the mantle, Dr. King reminds us, human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle, the tireless exertions and passionate concern of dedicated individuals. Thank you, Dr. Jenkins, for your sacrifices and passionate concern for all.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My time here this afternoon has been spent reflecting because of all of what everyone has said. And I've known Bill some people say from the very beginning. But we go way back, from growing up in the old town of Mount Pleasant. The personality that you hear here has always been there forever. He's always been the kind of person that you hear about. And it's been my job, I guess, through the years, to keep him out of trouble. Because our personalities are quite different, quite opposite. And I guess that's probably why we exist. We can exist together. Some people want me to tell stories, and I have decided that I'm not going to tell stories about them. That's to let them know that their secrets are. But I do want to let you know that he, the school he attended was a Quaker school we grew up attending. And at some point there, when it was time to travel to a high school, he was transferred to a Catholic school. And during that time, he gave the Catholic nuns so much grief until he had to turn back. He only lasted a couple of years, and I'm not going to tell you more about that. But Bill was an interesting guy. I have known him all my life, and I miss him, and I will miss him. And I will do all I can for Danielle and Diane. I will do as much as I can for them. What I want to do is read a resolution from his high school class. My graduation was a year ahead of him, but the folks cannot be here for this, so I'm doing a resolution for that class. Whereas, again, a human spirit has taken its flight at the call of the Heavenly Father to the mansion prepared for him from the foundation of the earth by an all-wise and loving God. We pen these resolutions to express our grief and the loss of our faithful class member and friend, Dr. William C. Jenkins. Whereas the class of 1963 of Lang High School have lost a fine, loyal class member, and the world has lost a noble character in the passing of Dr. William Jenkins. We rejoice that his belief in the promise of God in Psalm 73:24 is now fulfilled, and that is, thou shalt guide me with thy counsel and afterward receive me into glory. Bill's daily life gave evidence to the fact that he believed God's word and followed his guidance, seeking his leadership in all he said and did. He was upright and loving and kind in all his ways, sincere and genuine in all his doings. He's left behind him a beautiful memory, and we pray that young people will emulate his life. Therefore, be it resolved that even as we mourn Dr. William Jenkins, we are resigned to the Almighty Heavenly Father's will. That we express our gratitude to God for having left his wonderful life among us for a time to blossom out and bless us with the sweetness and righteousness, like the fragrance of a rose. That we express to the family and relatives who grieve today and our deep sympathy in their loss and the reminder that their loss is heaven's gain. A copy of these resolutions will be given to the family, and a copy will be kept for the class records. Humbly submitted, the Lang High School class of 1963.
Thank you, each and every one of you, and especially especially the people behind me, behind us, because it will help you do that. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to remind yourself of his words every day when you get up, and remember that he would ask you to continue to fight as much as you can. And to give you a little bit of our own personal history, there are some days when I'm making choices about my own career in life, and I wonder where that comes from. But it's in our DNA, so we have no choice, like some of you, we persuaded you, but we will continue to do that because we have to. So we look forward to carrying forward that legacy with you in the future. And thank you, everyone, for coming.
Good afternoon.
Diane, Danielle, Robin, Albert,
family, friends, colleagues, amazing platform of witnesses. I greet you this afternoon, giving great thanks to the one whom we give glory to by memorializing Dr. Bill Jenkins. We've heard already of Brother Bill's genius, his humanity, his voice for the voiceless, his love of family, especially that of his wife, Diane, his daughter, Danielle, his love for his people, his passion for justice, his unrelenting nature, his great debating skills, his peacemaking, his friendship. We've heard about a man who is a data-driven force of nature, a fighter who wielded nonviolence as his strategy of choice, a troublemaker for good. And now for the next few minutes, I must say that over the course of getting to know more and more about Brother Bill, that I am most intrigued by his witness of seeking. For behind his great works, we see a man who is a seeker, one who sought justice in the face of injustice, one who sought peace, one who sought humanity as a black man and for a people who, like himself, were often and are often dehumanized because of the very color of their beautiful sun-kissed skin. A man who sought truth and all the while lifted as he climbed. I'm reminded of the words spoken by Jesus of Nazareth, who, while delivering the Sermon on the Mount, said these words just before summing up the law and the prophets. He said, "Keep on asking, and you will receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking, and you will find. Keep on knocking, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks, receives. Everyone who seeks, finds. And to everyone who knocks, the door will be opened." These verses are a metaphor for prayer. How to pray, the importance of prayer, and the need for prayer in the life of one devoted to faith and living with faith. It speaks to each of us of the fact that prayer is active, and prayer is more than words being uttered in a beautiful poetic soliloquy. Prayer must be dynamic, and ultimately, prayer must be lived out. I submit to you this afternoon that Brother Bill's life was a prayer. A life of prayer and a life of faith requires action and seeking. And inherent in seeking is a humility that recognizes that one does not yet have all the answers. In seeking, one must acknowledge that one has not grasped all truth, but shall keep on seeking nonetheless. These verses tell of the actions of a seeker. One who asks, seeks, and knocks, but not only that, one who keeps on doing it, who remains persistent, who fights the good fight, who does not give up in spite of circumstance or challenge or roadblocks or dismay or naysayers, but one who keeps on keeping on. We have in the life of our brother Bill a witness of one who was a seeker, a persistent one, and who lived a life in such a way that his life was a prayer in action, and as a result of that, he has left with us all a great legacy. Brother Bill was a seeker of truth. Through his disciplined study of science and biometry and mathematics, he sought truth. In his own words, he says that there are many who think there is a conflict between science and God. He goes on to say that he never saw it as a conflict or a contradiction, for he said, science is the study of God. It's the study of how it works. Through his work as a scientist, statistician, and mathematician, he sought truth. Not unlike the three wise men who ventured by reading the constellations of the sky and identifying the placement of the North Star, the three wise scientist men who sought to know about this new baby boy Jesus who had been born as Jesus of Nazareth. Because of his seeking, he not only sought truth in statistics and mathematician and the health field, but he sought truth for his own soul. For those who may not know, fighting for justice is exhausting. Keeping on can bring forth weary, but Brother Bill sought for a place where his soul could rest. So whether that was in the beginning with his seeking through the AME church, or the Catholic school, or the Quaker school, or even in a congregational context, and back to the Friends Society, Brother Bill reminds me of what Barbara Brown Taylor, the first woman Episcopal priest, said when asked to choose between her religion and her neighbor, she will always choose her neighbor because God never told us to love our religion.
Yay, boo.
Brother Bill's work and life showed us that he chooses and chose his neighbor. Not only was he a seeker of truth, we know him to also be a seeker of justice and peace. As a student at Morehouse, he was inspired, as was my father, his classmate, and many of us here in this room, by the words of Dr. Benjamin E. May. Dr. May said, as Dr. Satcher alluded to, it must be borne in mind that the tragedy of life does not lie in not reaching your goal, but the tragedy in life lies in having no goal to reach. It isn't a calamity to die with dreams unfulfilled, but it is a calamity not to dream. It's not a disaster to be unable to capture your ideal, but it is a disaster to have no ideal to capture. It is not a disgrace not to reach the stars, but it is a disgrace to have no stars to reach for. His life and work embodied that message and stretched for stars and reached into new territories that led to visibility and justice for many. In his early days of activism as a foot soldier in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, he participated in sit-ins in front of the then governor of Georgia, Lester Maddox's restaurant, and was arrested with John Lewis and fought a good fight. As some have said, it was in those days that he would be considered a militant. He evolved in his thinking and his approach to activism and wanted to find a way for Black nationalism to make a difference and to do so in a different way, a peaceful way, by focusing on developing ideas about how to research and involve the community. And it's that persistence and perspective that led to the founding of the first Masters in Public Health program at any HBCU here at Morehouse School of Medicine. His activism and his seeking of justice was also evident in his fight for medical services to be provided to the victims and the families of the Tuskegee study, which we have heard about already today. Not only did he fight for them to be acknowledged and
fight for there to be an apology issued by President Bill Clinton, but his work continued to trail on to make sure that the families of those victims of the study had medical services to be provided to them throughout their life. And that work continued even after his retirement under the leadership of Brian E. Lindsay. His focus and seeking for justice and for peace is like the prayer of St. Francis, who said, "Lord, make me an instrument of your peace." A seeker of peace for himself and for others. A seeker of one who looked for a soft place to land, for he acknowledged and pushed others to acknowledge the burden of racism on the bodies of those who were its victims. On the mind, as a determinant for so many of the diseases and ills that we would encounter. He not only sought after truth, he sought after justice, he sought after peace, and in his seeking, he created a legacy that continues today. Because of his asking, because of his seeking, and because of his knocking, the doors have been opened for so many of us, as we have heard this day. Those who have come through Project Imhotep, those who have been a part of the Masters of Public Health here at Morehouse School of Medicine, the families of men who were traumatized and victimized in the Tuskegee study, the many, even here today, who are in the field of public health, in the fight for social justice because of the words and the witness of Brother Bill. Those who now seek to claim that black and brown bodies, physical bodies, are valuable and worthy of care and notice. He has left us several legacies in healthcare at Morehouse, and we shine the light on the fact that in his seeking, many were touched and blessed. And I suggest today that his greatest legacy thus far, and in all of the things that I've studied and heard and read about, is loud. For it shouts from the mountaintop that those with brown and black skin and curly hair and broad noses and full lips can proclaim that I too am America. I too am human. I too am Imago Dei. Even with brown and black skin, many can now proclaim because of his work that they too have been created in the very image of God and are worthy of dignity and worthy of notice and worthy of care and worthy of claiming a great legacy of which he has brought to light. As one of his favorite poets, who's also mine, Nikki Giovanni wrote, when she seized the English language and penned the poem When I Die, she said, "If ever I touch the life, and I hope that life knows, that I know that touching was and still is and will always be the true revolution." Dr. Bill Jenkins lived a life that touched many and has been a true, long-lived revolution. When great souls die, after a period, peace blooms. Slowly and always, irregularly, spaces fill with a kind of soothing electric vibration. Our senses restored, never to be the same, whispered to us. They existed. They existed. We can be and be better, but they existed. Brother Bill, Dr. Jenkins, a friend, a husband to beautiful Diane, a father to beautiful Danielle, an uncle, a mentor, a colleague. You existed.
and your legacy continues to exist. We thank you for a life well lived, for your witness of faithful seeking and service, for your love, a life who through your legacy continues. For Brother Bill, you have asked, you have sought, and you have knocked, and now may the door be open. May you enjoy sweet rest now, and know that your living has not been in vain. For the good news is, the promise is, that when you ask, it shall be answered. When you seek, you shall find. When you knock, the door shall be opened, because the one whom we seek seeks us ever more fervently. The one whom we pursue is pursuing us. And because of that, we know that Brother Bill has been caught. Brother Bill has been found. Let us pray. To you, O God, be all the glory for the life of your son, Bill Jenkins, the work that he's done, the voice that he had, the love that he gave is eternal. And we pray right now that through many dangers, toils, and snares, we know that he's already come. For it was grace that brought him safe thus far, and it is grace that has led him home. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that has saved him and those here in this place. For we once were lost, now we're found, blind, but now we see. Because of the life of Dr. Bill Jenkins, we see many things more clearly because of the life and the seeking witness of Dr. Jenkins. The door has been opened for so many. Because he touched us, may we also now reach and touch many. Because he lived, may we now live even more fully. It is our prayer, and together we all say, Amen. Won't you now please stand for the reception?